This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I'm so glad you're with us this week on New Beginnings. Coming up on the show today, Governor Tim Walz drops by. We also talk with Jay Happala from AARP Minnesota. He's got some great information for you about community grants coming up. And also, we turn our attention to the spiritual aspect of you when we talk with the Reverend James Stacy. He's giving us the third of a three-part series on the Burning Bowl. All this and more on New Beginnings. Hello again, everyone. And joining us right now is Governor Tim Walz. And I understand that you're rerunning a campaign that you did late last year where children who deserve a shot can get one.
Yeah, well, Freddie, Happy New Year to you, and thank you for having me. Yeah, that's right. I think your listeners know that we're in another battle here with Omicron. The good news is if you're vaccinated and boosted, your chance of ending up in the hospital is incredibly small. If you're not, it's a pretty dangerous time. One of the things is with our 5 to 11-year-olds, we've got a good chunk of them vaccinated, but there's a lot more to go. And we know that these incentives help. They help families. They help the kids. So we get them vaccinated. They can collect $200. You know, this is their way to put a down payment on a PS or whatever they need. But get them out there, get them vaccinated, keep them safe, keep the community safe.
You said early on in the campaign or early on in this campaign against the pandemic that you're following the science. Does the science show you that the Omicron variant will start a steep decline just as quickly as it shot up?
It looks like that, Freddie. And, you know, this is relatively new. Keeping in mind, we had the second case in America identified here, and that was December 1st. Seems like a lifetime ago. And here it's now over 90% of the cases, and we're seeing our case counts are higher than they've ever been in the pandemic. The good news is, whether it was in South Africa, Great Britain, or now we're seeing even in some of the southern states, that the decline is relatively quick. So we've got a couple weeks here that's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge to keep our kids in schools, our teachers in schools, and, of course, our healthcare facilities. I think the good news is, though, Freddie, that we should see a relatively rapid decline. And as I said, if you're vaccinated, you have a 17 times less chance of ending up in the hospital. And it goes up even higher of this taking lives tragically. So I do think we'll have a couple weeks here that'll be pretty tough. It's not too late. Get boosted, get the vaccines for these little ones. And then I think, you know, towards the first part of February here, we should see some real improvements.
Everyone, we're talking with Governor Tim Walz, a 7.9 surplus. Will you use some of that revenue to help lower the health care costs for some marginalized Minnesotans?
Absolutely. We know that the disparities in health care, the disparities in education, the disparities in home ownership, Freddie, you've talked about it. We've got so much to offer in our communities, and our children all deserve a chance. And I think this surplus, the vast majority of it was because of corporate profits that were unprecedented. There's some folks did really, really well during COVID, and there's a whole lot of folks that didn't. And with those increased tax revenues on the corporate side and decreased government spending here in Minnesota, we've got a surplus. And I think what we do is we make sure that we're reducing costs for Minnesotans. That means reducing cost of childcare, reducing cost of health care, giving folks options, and then getting some money back in their hands. I'd like to ask the legislature to do some of that, help pay for some of the things that COVID's caused globally in terms of gas prices increasing, some of the food costs increasing. And we think by the middle of next year, you'll start to see those come down. But this is a really good opportunity to make an investment in Minnesotans and making investments in communities.
Governor Walz with us. I know Jesse Ventura put checks in hands of Minnesotans when there was a surplus in Minnesota a few years ago.
Yeah, I think that's something that I agree with, too. I think, you know, when you do it one time, you're not creating long-term deficits. My biggest thing is I want it targeted at those folks that were hit hardest by this. I want targeted at middle-class folks and our children. Folks at the top end are doing just fine. And as long as this is targeted and those checks end up in the hands of folks, I think that's something that I'll advocate for. And then the investments that we can make, the investments in infrastructure. I got the chance to be over in North Minneapolis here, you know, this week, and there's some incredible projects out there that will have transformational impacts on communities. And as we've talked often, Freddie, the community knows what's best for them. The state can be a partner in making that happen.
So with that, with the investments that you're looking to infuse into the North community, what's your expectations for the upcoming session, which is just a few days away?
Yeah, I think this should be a good one. Minnesotans should expect us to compromise. they should expect us to be able to get a little bit of for everything in here. Make sure we're investing. We've got a rainy day fund. Do so fiscally sound. Since I've been governor, I've never raised a tax, and we have had record surpluses. And we can continue to do that. And I think, for example, we were over visiting V3 in North Minneapolis. These mm-hmm. are community groups aimed at families and kids that tell our kids they're worth it. And this is an Olympic swimming pool, the same one that was used for the Olympic trials last year, and a facility that will be open to our kids in North Minneapolis and throughout the area to make us a destination. And then we're at Phyllis Wheatley Center. They've done incredible things for 98 years. Making sure communities, especially the Black community, had a voice and had a place where our children could be valued. They're looking at making some improvements to their camping. They've got some land over in Carver County. They get our kids outside, let them learning about the things, and let them spend some nights under the stars. These are the exciting things that we can do. This COVID has been hard on our kids, been hard on our families. And now with Minnesota's financial position in this upcoming session, I'm going to encourage the legislators, let's do this civilly. Let's debate fairly. Let's disagree. We can disagree, but let's just agree that we can invest back, especially kids, families, and working folks who took the brunt during COVID, make things a little easier for them. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Finally, you had a roundtable discussion with farmers, seniors, a lot of healthcare experts. What was your biggest takeaway from that, Governor?
Well, that we're still a country that we're very dependent on our jobs to provide us health insurance. It's still way too expensive than it should be. The Affordable Care Act has made that much better. And here in Minnesota, we have a pretty high rate of that. Mm-hmm. But we're holding people back. And I'm going to propose that there's a Minnesota Care buy-in where folks can get a public option, affordable health care. And if you want to go and start your own business or do another job, you're able to do that. We shouldn't be asking folks to self-insure themselves. We hear farmers talking about $30,000 a year with high deductibles. It's pretty hard for people to hear of the massive profits going into healthcare and things like that when they're struggling just to get their kids covered. There's no reason that all of our children shouldn't have access to healthcare, access to dental care, and that we should have affordable prescription drugs. Those things all can make sense, and it makes Minnesota stronger. So I think you're going to see that. I would hope Minnesotans would start to look to that future, kind of the post-COVID of once we get through this wave, that there's some real opportunities here. We've been really resilient. And I think it's time for us to dream a little bit more, and especially around our kids. They've had a tough couple times. They're tough. They're resilient. I think they're going to be incredible leaders just because they've been through this. But let's give them the chance. Let's create these opportunities for them.
Governor, you must be looking at my notes. My last question for you, what does the new Minnesota look like past or post-COVID?
Yeah, I still believe, Freddie, in this one Minnesota. You heard me talk about this. It drives me crazy the way people try and divide us, telling us that somehow greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities don't share values. We have different lifestyles. I'm not asking everybody to live the same way. I'm giving that opportunity and asking us to make sure that everybody's welcome in Minnesota. And the way you want to live your life, we want to make sure those opportunities are there. And I think in a post-COVID, there's more opportunities to work from home. Post-COVID, there's more opportunities for us to learn and focus on what it takes to care for our children. We've done incredibly well, but we need to fix some things. Fix some things like childcare. Fix some things like long-term care for our parents. And then making sure we're investing in communities that have so much to offer. This V3 opportunity is there's just so much talent and so much innovation happening in North Minneapolis. Let's make sure as a state we're investing there, too, to make sure that those kids have every opportunity as a kid in Mankato or a kid in Worthington or a kid in Edina would have. And so I think this one Minnesota piece, even more than ever, we saw what happens when we pull together and help each other. We also see what happens when we decide to fight and pull against one another. I don't want that drama. I don't want this constant everything has to be a fight about things. I think there's compromises because Minnesotans have always found a way to do that.
All right. Governor, we got to leave it right there. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Freddie.
Introducing the New Beginnings podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. Check out the New Beginnings podcast today.
Thank you. Minnesota is home to a robust network of more than 300 food shelves that may be able to offer additional food support to families and individuals who are suffering from hunger. Hunger Solutions can locate a food shelf near you. Call the Minnesota Food Helpline at 1-888-711-1151. 888-711-1151 or use the interactive map at hungersolutions.org. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. It's a wonderful weekend, and it always is when we're together on the weekends with Freddie Bell and New Beginnings. And let's talk about your vision. I know that there's a song that says, I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. And picture this, clear vision with just one drop. Yes, an eye drop that improves close-range vision could make misplaced reading glasses less of an inconvenience for many of the 128 million Americans who suffer from age-related deficits in near vision. Vuity, which became available by prescription last month, is a once-a-day treatment that can help users see up close without affecting their long-range vision. For anybody who doesn't want to fiddle with reading glasses, this might be a really helpful alternative. That according to Dr. Scott McRae, who's an ophthalmologist at the University of Rochester Center for Visual Science. McRae was not involved in the clinical trials for the drug, which was approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration last October. Nearly 90% of U.S. adults older than 45 have problems with close-range vision. I know I do. A condition known as presbyopia that typically worsens over time. To focus on close objects, the eye's lens must change shape, yet it becomes less flexible as people age, making this process difficult. Your ability to zoom in decreases, McRae says. Typically, eye doctors recommend that people with presbyopia wear over-the-counter or prescription reading glasses when they need to see up close. But Vuity may also be an option for them, says Dr. McRae. Vuity improves near vision by constricting the size of the pupil. It makes a pupil small, creating what is called a pinhole effect, which reduces the amount of peripheral light that passes through the eye that can make it hard to focus. Vuity's active ingredient, a drug called pilocarpine, is not a new medication. It's actually one of the oldest drops that is available in ophthalmology. That, according to Dr. McRae, it has been used for decades to treat glaucoma. At least 9 eye drop products similar to Vuity are in clinical development to treat presbyopia and may be available in the future. McRae noted that Vuity will work best for people who have only mild to moderate presbyopia, which probably means people between the ages of 45 and 55. Vuity is not typically covered by health or vision insurance, and it might cost around $80 per 30-day supply. Although the clinical trials did not report any serious side effects, about 15% of the subjects who took Vuity reported mild headaches compared to 7% of subjects who took placebo drugs. A close-up look at your eyes. You got that close-up look at your eyes? I'm Freddie Bell, and this is New Beginnings, having a great time with you this weekend. You can reach me at 888-639-9738. I would love to hear from you. If you prefer, you can reach me by email. It's simply freddie@freddiebell.com. That's freddie@freddiebell.com. Or on Twitter, at Freddie Bell. It's a point at listening. This is New Beginnings, and we're here each weekend. And our program has more to come. All you have to do is stay right there.
Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment. Every day is a chance for a fresh start.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
You're listening to New Beginnings, and if you've ever wondered how you can get a copy of the program that you're hearing, all you have to do is go to freddiebell.com and click on the radio tab for New Beginnings, and it'll take you right there. The podcast is there just for you. You're listening to New Beginnings, and we continue right now. Now's my favorite time of the program when we turn our attention to talk finance with Leibel Sternbach. Leibel is an amazing author. He is the Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. Leibel, welcome back to the program. So glad to have you on New Beginnings. How are you this week?
I am doing good. How are you?
Unbelievable. So excited to be with you today to talk about money. And that's one of my favorite topics, of course.
Yeah, mine as well. Love educating people.
There's been a lot of talk about Roth conversions these days. So, Libel, let's get right into it. Let's start off very basic. What is a Roth conversion and why would I want it?
So that's a really great question. So Roth conversions, right? Traditionally, when we save money for retirement, right? The government incentivizes us to put that money away, right? So if you think about historically how 401ks and individual retirement accounts came about, it was because back in the day, people used to work 20, 30 years for the same company, and then you get your golden watch and hopefully a pension, right? And you'd live off of that. Except that, you know, companies weren't really managing their pensions properly. And so Congress came along and said, you know what, let's have people manage their own savings, their own retirement savings. And they said, well, how are we going to incentivize people in order to put away this money for retirement? So they said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to allow them to deduct the money that they save for retirement and take it off of their current income. So if you made, let's say, $50,000 that year and you put away five of it for retirement, well, as far as taxes are concerned, you only earned $45,000, right? Which is great. Now you have $5,000 that's growing for retirement and you saved, you know, $5,000 worth of income on your taxes, which is awesome. Except that what happens when you come into retirement and you start pulling that money out? Well, Congress says, well, we're going to tax you as if it's ordinary income, just like as if you were earning it, right? So a Roth conversion comes along and says, let's pay taxes on this money now and turn that into tax-free money in retirement. Because if we had paid taxes on the money when we earned it, right, and then had grown it in the stock market, we would be paying preferential rates on taxes. So a Roth conversion allows us to shift that money from savings to retirement.
Everyone, we're talking with Libel. He's on fire. We're talking about the Roth conversions. So you're talking about the tax rates. So if I'm paying taxes as we go with the Roth conversion, what happens when I retire? What does it look like at that point?
So that's a great question, right? What will our tax rates be in retirement with a Roth conversion? And will it lower our taxes? And as you probably know, income is the highest level of tax in the United States, right? The highest level for income tax is, you know, right now 37%. Whereas activities that we like to encourage, such as businesses, which help our economy grow, right? They have a tax rate of 21%. And then we have long-term investments, right? Where you're putting money into the economy to help other companies grow. Those have, you know, other lower tax rates, right? Which can be anywhere from 0 to 20% again. So when we look at Roth conversion, what we're trying to do is get ourselves out of that income tax on all of our money when we pull it out of retirement. And ideally, we want to do it at times when our income is lower so that we're not paying that full rate that we would during our working years. So think about it as kind of picking and choosing when is the most optimal time for you to do that conversion so that you will save money in taxes. And kind of the easy guide for how to decide if a Roth conversion is right for you, of converting that pre-tax money to after-tax money, is to look at what your tax rate is now, your marginal tax rate. So how much you will pay on the last dollar you earn this year. And you're going to look at what your effective tax rate in retirement is. So what is the average amount that you're going to pay in taxes in retirement and see which one is lower? So if you're going to be lower in retirement than you are today, then it doesn't make sense to pay taxes on your money now. Wait until you pull it out in retirement and you're at a lower tax rate. But if your tax rate in retirement is going to be higher because you've lost those deductions and those credits that we give to people in their working years, right, such as for owning a home, paying a mortgage, having children, you know, going to college, saving for retirement. All of those things are money that's being taken off of your tax return because we're incentivizing you to do that activity.
Liable, before we get too deep into this, I'm wondering, how many times can we do this?
So the truth is that you can really do it as often as you want, but you really shouldn't do it more than once a year. And that's mainly so that if you decide that it's not something that you want to do, you can undo it. Having said that, when you do that Roth conversion, it's kind of a two-step process. You're pulling that money out, putting it into a Roth account, and then you're paying taxes on it. So you're recognizing that income at the time that you do it. So in theory, you can do it whenever you want, but I would recommend sticking to one time a year so that you can undo it if you need to.
So what about if I'm a small business? And I know there are a lot of people who are listening today. They are small business owners. How does a Roth impact them
or benefit them? Yeah. So businesses have a lot more options than individuals. So anyone can do a Roth conversion. 401k is a business retirement account. A IRA is an individual retirement account. So you can be a business owner, which they have, you know, self-employed IRAs or simple IRAs. So there's different IRAs for businesses, or they can have a solo 401k, but they can do that same thing. Now they can even, they have the option because they control their retirement accounts. They can actually fund it with after-tax dollars if they wanted to. So they can start that off right. Now, something that businesses can do that individuals cannot do, businesses control their income a lot more than individuals because they can control when expenses are shown on their books and when they aren't. Mm-hmm. They can also purchase policies and put, like life insurance policies or benefits for their employees. And as long as it's done fairly so that it's not non-discriminatory, which is the term that the IRS has, they can get a lot of tax benefits out of that. So there's a lot of things that businesses should explore in addition to doing Roth conversions.
Liable, I like the way you explained that. It makes it really much more clear than what I've heard recently. So let's get into today's question. It comes from Fred. I love that name, who's a part of our Facebook group. Fred asks, Liable, if you have zero income coming in the next 4 to 5 years and are filing taxes jointly, and you have a very healthy 401k, what would a good tax rate to be to shoot for doing a Roth conversion? And I'm thinking of the reduction that would give me the RMDs in future years.
Yep. So that is an excellent question. And it's really great that you're looking towards the future to RMDs, because those required minimum distributions that Congress has attached to your traditional 401k and IRA, those are those secret taps that Congress has put in there so that they can drain it at the rate of their choosing. So although right now, maybe it'll look like you'll be in, you know, let's say the 12 to 20% tax bracket, come retirement time, they may say, well, you got to increase that distribution, and they may change the tax code so your deductions are all gone, which will increase it even further. So when you are not working, right, you want to try to fill up those lower tax brackets as much as possible. So fill up that 0% tax bracket. You got that personal exclusion, right? Yeah, that's, you want that $20,000, $24,000, $20,000. You want to fill that up right away. And then think about the next tax bracket, that 12% to 15%, right? Is that worth filling up? Where will you be in retirement? But definitely you want to make those strategic decisions and look at where I am today versus where I will be in the future. And, you know, kind of take a guess and say, what will be better for me? Paying the taxes now when it's close to zero, or in the future where I have an unknown and it could be much higher.
Wow. Great answer. So what I'm hearing is that while converting this money from taxable to tax-free is a correct answer, How you do it might be just as important as if you do it, correct?
Correct. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Liable. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. Liable's website is libelonfire.com. That's libelonfire.com. And more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Good morning again, and welcome back to New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, your host, and with me is Mr. Joe McKenzie. He is the founder of Ripple Connects, where he turns candidates into contenders. Good morning, Joe McKenzie.
Good morning, Freddie Bell. How are you today?
Unbelievable. For folks who are joining us for the first time, just to level set, what does it mean that you turn candidates into contenders?
We help our clients have a contender mindset for the jobs that they want. And so through specific coaching strategies, we interviewing and networking and building the bench of career advocates, the people that we know, we try to bring the ideal job to that person through these specific techniques. And that's a contender mindset. Anybody that just applies can be an applicant or what have you, but you have to be a contender. And you have to contend for the jobs that you want, and you have to be ready, you have to be practiced, and that's where the Ripple Connects methods apply.
The name of the company is Ripple Connects. What does that mean?
Ripple Connects, I've always believed that the ripple effect goes outward, and so if you do those things, if you take the right steps, that ripple effect connects you to opportunities, to other people, to ideas, and it's really helped me in my career and to really move it forward. And it's because of that ripple effect in my mind. That's how I envision it.
All right. Folks can reach Joe McKenzie by going to the website at rippleconnects.com, or they can call you, Joe McKenzie.
Absolutely. At 763-438-1621.
We're talking about making that transition strategy for a successful career move in 2022. We're into the second year of the global pandemic. And we want to talk about how you remain forward thinking. How do you stay positive when this pandemic, people being ill, new variants and so forth, but it all seems to have a real impact on what we're trying to do to move forward. Let's talk about what has happened in the last couple of years and how we can strategize to overcome that and keep our career path on track.
Well, Freddie, I see there's so much that's happened with the global pandemic and the issues and the impact that it's had on careers and organizations. Most of that is out of our control. And what's in our control is how we adapted, how we stayed positive. How did we get creative to solve some of the problems we never thought we'd be solving because of this? That's the mindset that continues to be in our control. But also that may be an opportunity for us to make a career change, to enter the workforce coming out of college. I can't imagine remotely studying when I went to college. I can't even imagine that. But most college graduates today had a big, big part of remote learning. Well, let's use that because that's the environment, the workplace you're stepping into. That is what we can control, Freddie, in our strategies is how we adapted, how we stayed forward thinking, how we were creative to solve problems. And if we can talk about that and cite specific examples for that, then we may be in a better chance to have a successful career transition in the workforce here in 2022, despite the global pandemic.
Interesting. So we're taking something that can be perceived as a negative by a lot of people. I know I'm one of those, but you're saying cite some examples of how you've overcome, how you remained positive, how you've turned that seeming challenge into an opportunity and sharing some meaningful examples with that.
Absolutely, because we don't know what's going to happen in 2023 and beyond. The workplace, the virtual workplace, supply chain issues, worker shortage, they may exist for years. And so therefore, if we're able to cite examples that experience how we've gotten through the global pandemic in the workplace or coming out of college into the workplace, these are all relevant and timely for employers who are looking for people that have those skills, have that mindset, have that leadership, have that motivation to work through it, because there's a certain amount of things we can't control, and how we adapt and how we can share examples, what we did over at this ABC company and we want to transition to a new industry sector. Well, that's That's exactly what an employer is looking for. How do I adapt my company like you did over there? Without citing examples, that employer won't know. Without you talking about it, they won't know. And this is what's in our control, despite the global pandemic and what it's doing to the world today.
Interesting. Talk to our college graduates, recent college graduates, or those who are looking to graduate this year, or someone who's, for whatever reason, is trying to make a transition. How can they talk about their transferable skills, and how can they know if these skills, like leadership or communication, can be a demand right now and transfer somewhere else?
Well, the college students, they've had to adapt to distance learning. They had to find new resources that may not have been there just months before. You had to work at, you know, if you're working on a senior project or in an internship, often, you know, you were faced with working as a team virtually. Cite those examples. Cite the skills that you see in yourself that you feel can transfer. You know, some of the most sought after transferable skills out there of communication and leadership and problem solving and teamwork, that may existed in the midst of how you completed your senior project or how you completed an internship. Those are the transferable skills that I want each college student to be talking about, as well as just that forward-thinking mindset and how you adapted to that distance learning model that you never saw yourself going through, because prior to the pandemic, you may have been sitting in a classroom. You might have been sitting around a table with your team, but here you are having to adapt, more than likely similar to what the workplace was going through. So college students that are entering the workforce, I think, are very, very in tune with how the workplace is operating today.
Interesting. So how do I stand out if I'm this college student and I say, well, I attended virtual classes and I volunteered a little bit. How can I make that different than anybody else who's been on a virtual call or they volunteered?
If you cite specific examples of how you did it, not just said we completed this project, talk about the challenges that you overcame. Talk about the results that you drove. Talk about your role within that team. Talk about your leadership, your motivation. An employer wants to hear how you did it, not that you did it, but how you did it, your process for solving a problem, how you approach working as a team, how do you communicate, how do you adapt to things that are not going your way. That's how you stand out, is describe your process for all those. And that will certainly set you apart, because you're telling that potential employer how you do it. How do you solve problems? How do you work as a team? How do you lead a team? How do you stay motivated? How do you adapt? That will help you.
Do you think people tend to underplay their communication skills? Do they tend to underplay leadership or problem solving, how they work with one another, and critical thinking? Do we tend to underplay that, Joe McKenzie?
I think at times we do. But often those are the critical things that help win the day. And if your transferable skills are portable, and if you can bring those with you and how you approach those problems or how do you communicate effectively, then that gets that out of your head, and that helps you to refine that. You might see some shortcomings that you want to work on. And so I think people do understate those skills, but not everybody's a good communicator. Not everybody can adapt. Not everybody's a good communicator. And that is our job as that contender looking for that next opportunity to cite that and to provide examples and to let anybody know your process for going about that.
A lot of this takes a lot of self-reflection in order to get in touch with what our transferable skills might be. Looking at what we've done over the last year or two, how do you suggest that we go about making sure that we understand what gifts we actually bring to a potential employer or the same employer that we're trying to get a promotion with? What do we need to do?
I think you said reflecting upon where our skills are at or what others have recognized in us. That helps us to differentiate ourselves. Not everybody has the same skill set, and that's good, because together we're working as a team, we're formidable. We bring that skill set. I think it's a matter of reflecting It's a matter of talking about that, asking others that work closely with us what they see in us and how we've impacted them, but also looking forward to how can I refine that? How can I get better at communicating? How can I get better at leading a team? Those are all helpful steps for someone to always be in that growth mindset.
All right, Joe, we're just about out of time. Let's give that telephone number once again for folks who'd like to contact you directly.
That telephone number is 763-438-1621, or they can reach out to me via rippleconnects.com.
Joe, you do some fine work at Ripple Connects.
Yes, we do. We turn candidates into contenders.
And this is New Beginnings.
If you are ready to reinvent, recalibrate, or retool your career, Ripple Connects can help. That's rippleconnects.com. We work one-on-one with our clients in a safe, collaborative fashion designed to significantly improve the likelihood of landing the ideal engagement. Take control of your job search and create your ideal future. Engage with Ripple Connects, where we turn candidates into contenders. For more information, rippleconnects.com.
Introducing the New Beginnings podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. Check out the New Beginnings podcast today.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
You're listening to New Beginnings, and if you've ever wondered how you can get a copy of the program that you're hearing, all you have to do is go to freddiebell.com and click on the radio tab for New Beginnings, and it'll take you right there. The podcast is there just for you. You're listening to New Beginnings, and we continue right now. A lot of people, and rightfully so, are talking and thinking about New Year's resolutions, and here's one that you can possibly keep. Stop dieting and start savoring your food instead. There's a lot of evidence right now to suggest that diets don't work. I think a lot of us know that. Research shows that food restrictions just make you want to eat more. And over the long term, dieting can backfire, triggering your body's survival defenses, slowing your metabolism, and making it even harder to lose weight in the future. So what's the alternative to counting calories or banning your favorite foods? Many weight researchers are encouraging a new approach to healthy eating based on brain science. A variety of techniques that encourage mindful awareness of how we eat can be used to quell cravings and reshape our eating habits. The paradigms around willpower just don't work according to a lot of researchers we've talked to. You have to start by knowing how your mind works. Tracy Mann, who heads the Health and Eating Laboratory at the University of Minnesota, is noting that beyond the disappointment of not keeping weight off, dieting also impacts our bodies in a number of negative ways. Restricting eating can impact memory and executive function, and it can lead to obsessive food thoughts and trigger a surge in cortisol, which is a stress hormone. A diet is an unpleasant and short-lived way to lose weight. That, according to Mann, she's the author of Secrets from the Eating Lab, The Science of Weight Loss, The Myth of Willpower, and Why You Should Never Diet Again. She says you might take it off in the short term, but it comes back. It happens no matter who you are. It happens to people with great willpower and to people with crappy willpower. There's an app out there called the Eat Right Now that uses mindfulness exercises to help people change their eating habits. One Brown University study of 104 overweight women found that mindfulness training reduced cravings-related eating by 40%. It has been noted that eating behaviors such as absent-mindedly snacking on potato chips are often the result of habit loops that get reinforced over time. Habit loops can be formed from both good and bad experiences. Ice cream, for example, is something we might eat during celebrations. The brain learns to associate eating ice cream with feeling good. Although there's nothing wrong with ice cream, it can become a problem when we start eating it unthinkingly after emotional triggers, such as when we feel stressed or angry. Now our brains have learned that ice cream also makes us feel good in times of stress, reinforcing the habit loop. And by understanding our own habit loops and triggers behind them, the doctors say that you can help break the hold that you have by updating your brain with new information and giving you more hope that you can stick to that New Year's resolution that you've already perhaps have broken. I'm Freddie Bell, Appointed Listening. We've heard some great conversations earlier today with Joe McKenzie. He is the founder of Ripple Connects, and we've got more great information. All you have to do is stay right there.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hi again, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell. Thank you for being with us this weekend. And right now, on this warmer weekend, it's time to talk to Jay Happala from AARP Minnesota. He is the Associate State Director for Community Engagement. And college grants are on the way. And I understand, Jay, that you have community challenge grants that many of our listeners can avail themselves to.
Yeah, that's right, Freddie. And whether it's 30 degrees or negative 10 degrees, I think a lot of Minnesotans still agree that it's a great place to live, despite the cold weather. And we do have these grants available. I'll tell your listeners all about them. You know, a livable community like what we have in Minnesota is supposed to be someplace that's safe and secure, offers choices for housing and transportation, and it's a place that's equitable for all people, allows everyone to participate in civic and social life. But we know that these great places take a long time to build, and it takes a lot of work to sustain them. And meanwhile, not everything is so rosy. You know, our population is really changing with people living longer. That presents a lot of opportunities, also some challenges. And the pandemic is changing everything. And we know here in Minnesota and elsewhere, we have problems with equitable treatment and disparities for different groups, racial groups and age groups, and there's other factors too. So Minnesota is a nice place. We have a lot of room for improvement too, and that's why we're announcing a 6-year of community challenge grants, and this is funds for projects that demonstrate change and help build the momentum that improves livability in our neighborhoods for all people.
So Jay, who's eligible to receive the grants?
Yeah, these are for government agencies, so cities or counties, and also the nonprofit organizations that folks volunteer with and collaborate with the cities to make these type of improvements, whether it's for the parks or the transportation system, housing projects, or to get residents involved in these type of projects. So there's a very broad category of the type of projects that people can apply for, but it does take that agency or that organization to be the one applying for the funds. But I know there's a lot of volunteers out there who are connected with these organizations, and you all can spread the word and get your local leaders to get involved and take advantage of these opportunities.
Do you have a quick example of some of the grants or projects that have been benefited by these grants?
For sure. So in Minnesota, over the years, we've had 13 different projects, many of them here in the Twin Cities. A few examples, just last year in Brooklyn Park, they decided that, what they'd like to have was essentially movable sidewalks. So if there was a concert in the park or maybe, a festival somewhere in Brooklyn Park, they could put these movable sidewalks down so folks could have an easier time walking across the uneven ground and more people could participate in them. And then over in St. Anthony, they got some funds and they got a citizens group together to make improvements to sidewalks and crosswalks so people could be safe and outdoors and getting around their neighborhood more safely. So those are just a couple examples.
Well, we're just about out of time. Jay Happala, he's with us from AARP Minnesota, and we really appreciate the camaraderie that we've developed over the years. How can we apply for these grants?
Yep. So applications are open now at aarp.org/community challenge. And those applications are due March 16th.
All right. That's Jay Happala. Jay, I can't thank you enough for being with us. And I neglected to say it at the beginning. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year. Let's make it a good one.
We will. And New Beginnings continues right now.
This is the Real Possibilities Update, your guide to all the exciting things that are happening with AARP in the Twin Cities. Because if you don't think real possibilities in the Twin Cities when you think AARP, well, then you don't know ARP. Get to know AARP and see all the real possibilities right here in the Twin Cities at aarp.org/Twin Cities.
You would do anything to protect the ones you love. Help make sure your child is protected from dangerous diseases by getting them vaccinated. Talk to your child's doctor about staying on track with recommended vaccines during this COVID-19 pandemic.
This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Welcome back to New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, and let's take a look at a news roundup. Some of the items that I saw over the weekend that I thought that maybe we would share with you to give you an idea of what's going on several different fronts. I noticed that life expectancy has fallen again in 2020. Yes, life expectancy at birth fell to 77 years in 2020 as the coronavirus pandemic surged through the country. The average expected lifespan declined 1.8 years over 2019. Death rates rose for every age group except children ages 1 through 14, with COVID-19 becoming the third leading cause of death in the United States, that behind heart disease and cancer. This is according to the report from the National Center for Health Statistics. The disease caused by the coronavirus was the underlying cause of death for 350,800 people last year, 10.4% of the 3.3 million deaths recorded. Life expectancy had been ticking down in recent years, a troubling trend driven by drug overdose deaths and suicides. But the pandemic has caused much larger declines. A 1.8-year drop was the largest reduction in a single year in more than 75 years. That's our life expectancy. Let's look at Alzheimer's. There's a new study, an innovative new blood test that may detect hidden signs of Alzheimer's disease, is being used to screen participants in a memory loss study. The test is not yet recommended for widespread screening because improvements are needed. But for the first time, the test by C2N Diagnostics is being used in a major National Institutes of Health-funded drug study at 75 medical centers. When is the best time to put out a fire? When it starts, that according to Dr. Julio Rojas Martinez of UC San Francisco's Memory and Aging Center, which is using the test to identify people as young as 55 to participate in the NIH's AHEAD study aimed at finding drugs to delay memory loss before symptoms begin. And homicide at high rates in pregnancy. A study published in November in the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology found that homicide is a leading cause of death among pregnant and postpartum people, and that black women and women and girls under the age of 25 were at the greatest risk. The study by researchers at Tulane University found that people who are pregnant or in the postpartum period are twice as likely to die by homicide than any other leading cause of maternal mortality. Using data from the National Center for Health Statistics from 2018 and 19, the study's authors determined that about two-thirds of the incidents occurred at home. This study is the first to include death records from every state in the country. 2018 was the first year that every state had added a pregnancy checkbox to their death certificate. And new reports are also saying there was an abrupt decline in the percentage of older Americans reporting serious problems with concentration, memory, and decision-making over a decade, particularly among women, that according to a new study. Researchers are heralding the new findings as very welcome news. From 2008 to 2017, the percentage of adults ages 65 and older in the United States with serious cognitive issues dropped from 12.2 to 10%, that according to researchers from Canada. In a hypothetical scenario without the decline, about an additional 1.1 million older people in the United States would have reported having mental congestion. And older women appear to drive much of this plunge. Serious cognitive problems declined 23% over a decade among women in this age group compared to 13% among men. The findings were based on 10 annual American community surveys conducted by the U.S. Census Bureau that included a total of 5.4 million people in the United States ages 65 and older. Further research showed that each additional year of formal education the study participants had resulted in a lower risk of developing dementia, an umbrella term that includes several diseases and conditions that cause debilitating impairments in memory and concentration. Researchers say that 60% of the decline in serious cognitive issues was the force of generational differences in educational attainment. But education cannot explain the entirety of the decline in cognitive issues among older people, researchers say. It is possible that better nutrition, declines in smoking, and the phase-out of leaded gasoline, which previous research had connected to increased rates of dementia, also contributed to the positive trends. The researchers say they still need to investigate whether these positive trends will continue in the decades ahead and why men's rates of improvements are lagging behind those of women, that according to the researchers. Looking at cognitive issues, life expectancy falling in 2020, a new Alzheimer's test, and homicide rates in pregnancy. All of this and more on New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for making us a part of your weekend on New Beginnings. This is Freddie Bell reminding you that every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.